For the month of June, we have a very dear friend of mine to share his story and his experience with the 12 steps. I've known George ever since my second day in Alcoholics Anonymous.
You're sick enough to come back.
Absolutely. For those that didn't hear, he said, and I was sick enough to come back. I can't say enough good things about George, and I'm sure when you get done listening to him speak, you'll feel the same way. I like to say this about George. He has a gruff exterior, but he's a pussycat inside. So don't let the mask fool you. Anyway, here tonight to share his story and his experience with steps 1 and 2 is George S. from Freehold, New Jersey.
Cat inside. Don't tell the people I sponsor that. Good evening. My name is George Smith, and I am definitely an alcoholic. If you're ever down in the Freehold area, you need somebody to talk to, or if you just need somebody to talk to, my telephone number is 732-577-8350. Don't be afraid to call at any time, day or night. If you don't get me on the phone, you'll get my wife, and you can talk to her, too. But the only thing is, she's not as sweet and kind and loving as I am. And pray like hell you don't get my daughter, because she'll tell you to call your sponsor and go to a meeting. She's black belt, I want honor. Let me tell you a little bit about myself before I get into my drinking dialogue, because everything I'm going to tell you about my drinking experience and history is a lie, because it's either been told to me by people who were just as drunk and just as screwed up as I was, so the reality of it is all mixed up and all screwed up. And the little bits that I do remember, I don't remember. Basically, I drank for 37 years. Out of that 37 years, I'm missing 15 years of it. I was a functional blackout, miserable SOB. If I don't take and sound like I'm very happy, it's just that when I try to carry the message, and I use the word try, I'm scared to death right now, to be honest with you. But I'm very passionate about this program, because this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I also have trouble saying the word. I can say the word alcoholic, but, you know, but I know what I am. I'm very passionate about this program because it saved my life. Because in all rights, I should be dead. Because when I came in, on the day I had my last drink, I was bleeding from orifices of my body where I should not have been bleeding. I had yellow complexion. My eyes were not seeing anything. And they were all pussy. And I was a sick pup. And I wanted another drink. But I had my choice, either have that drink and not go to a rehab and go to jail for 5 years and $25,000 fine. Being as drunk and as just screwed up as I was, I realized that 28 days in a rehab is a lot less than 5 years, and a hell of a lot cheaper than $25,000 worth of fines. And the only reason I was facing that is because the stupid cops did not understand. I got my 17th DWI in the state of New Jersey, and my New Jersey driver's license. Because the cops were picking on me, I think. I really don't remember too much. All I saw was the videos of it, you know. Did you ever take and see that thing bouncing off the wall? That was me. Yeah. I got claustrophobia real bad, and they were going to lock me in a cell, and I didn't want to go. I fell down a flight of stairs in the middle of the interrogation room. At least that's what was on the report. But I also must remind you, I'm on a revoke list in 4 other states with 4 different licenses each. I lost my licenses, my driver's license in this state the last time for 10 years, 18 years ago. And the state of New Jersey still will not find it. Apparently, they lost my license this time. How I wind up in that condition? Very easy. See, I don't remember my first drink. When I was a little kid, I used to cry a lot. My parents didn't get much sleep, so the doctor says, well, give them a little bit of beer and they'll quit crying. I cry a lot. Oh, did I cry a lot. I do remember some of the early days, you know. When I started learning how to walk, I could go to the refrigerator. And my parents were heavy drinkers. By no means or description thereof in the big book fits my parents in no way. My parents were caring, loving parents, drunk or sober. I do not take and blame my alcoholism on them. I do not take and say I come from a dysfunctional house, because my family, they tried very hard to take and raise my sister and I. I was the dysfunction in that house. When I was old, big enough to go in the refrigerator, when my parents were having parties, I'd go and I'd get the beer for everybody, you know, and they'd walk it back to them and everybody'd pop out their church key out, and, you know, and they'd give me the little dregs on the bottom of the can of beer, you know, or on the bottom of the bottle. And I'll tell you what, they drank a lot more than they wanted to, because I wanted that little bit of dregs. And I could remember one of the greatest days of my life was when I could take and learn how to use a church key myself, and I could go, hey, George, give me a drink. Later. You know, I didn't need them anymore. Because I just go in the refrigerator and get a beer and get drunk. And I remember my first drunk on a half can of beer, man. Oh, it went down and it came up. And I fell down the stairs. I have a little trouble with stairs. And I puked all over myself. I peed in my pants. And God, I wanted to do it again. And I did. Many times. We used to have, my grandfather used to live with us. And he was the resident alcoholic. Old Adolf Smith, von Schmidt to be exact. And my sister and I, every day, would call up the taxi service in the town we lived in, and they would deliver a case of beer, a quart of booze, and a bottle of wine to my grandfather. When I was 7 years old, I called up one day, and they delivered two cases of beer, two bottles of wine, two bottles of booze. And my drunken grandfather never got the second of each. I had arrived. I was free. I was going to be popular. I was going to be fantastic. I was going to be able to do everything that... Because I thought, you know, people drank to be happy, to be sociable. I don't think I was ever happy, and I don't think I was too sociable, because if you wanted my beer, I was going to have to rip you off for something. And I did. I used to have the best collection of 45 records. If anybody in here is too young to remember, they look like CDs, a little bit bigger, with a song on each side that lasted 2.5 minutes. And you could fit quite a few of them in the liner of your jacket. But I was invited to a lot of parties. I'd bring a six-pack of beer for them and a six-pack of beer for me, and hey, you know, everything was great, you know. At 9 years old, I had my first cigarette, and I got a buzz off of that. Somebody handed me a funny one, and I said, ooh, yeah. At 10 years old, I read or heard somewhere that the Meadowlands were all full of marijuana from the Hartson Mountain bird seed. My father had a poor parakeet. They hadn't even started that because all the food went out the field in the back and I smoked everything that came up. I found out what it was like. Okay, that was a little bit of my drug story, and that's about all you're going to hear about me. Suffice to say, as far as drugs are concerned, I've done just about everything there is. I got tracks on my arm that are 25 years old, but I honestly believe that I wouldn't have done them if it hadn't been for the fact that I was drunk. I was a daily drinker from the day that my grandfather got that double delivery at the age of 7. I drank every day. School was just another place to go to sleep. About 9, 10 years old, my godfather, he said to my father, he says, that kid ain't never going to make college. He was right. He says, I'm going to start teaching him the trade of being a plumber. That sounds like fun. I can make some money. And plumbers drink. Yeah, I'll become a plumber. So I learned how to become a plumber. And I drank. And I liked it. And I made a few dollars. So I could take and go out. I had a sister that was 4 years, 4 days older than me. And she hung around with people that were a couple of years older than her. And where we lived, we used to live in a border town right on the New York-Jersey border line. The drinking age in New York at that time was 18. The driving age in New Jersey was 17, but if you could get into a bar, open the door, and reach up and put the money on the bar, and get the drink down without spilling it up over the edge of the bartender would serve you. I was never proofed. But that's my growing up years. You know, school was, as I said, was just another place to sleep. I couldn't get in trouble in the town I lived in because my parents had gone to school with half the teachers and half of the police department. So anytime I'd be passed out in school, they'd just call up my parents, you know, and they'd come down, you know. By the time the old man got home, because he was an over-the-road trucker at the time, hey, all was forgotten, you know. Or if I got in trouble with being publicly intoxicated, the cops would kick my butt, take me home, you know, and... by the time the old man got home, he unwound from coming off the road, you know, everything was cool. And I didn't see anything wrong with what I was doing. I got thrown out of 3 different high schools for basically the same reason. The one high school, because the teachers go up over out for their 1 or 2 martini lunch, and I go out for my 3 or 4 hours sitting in the rainbows and bar and grill, you know, lunch. Sometimes I made it to work. Because even back then I was getting in trouble for missing work. But see, it was all the damn teachers' fault. It was all the bosses' fault. And the damn cops. They just couldn't leave me alone. Didn't they understand that I'm a hard-working, growing up, young teenage boy with young, impressionable years, you know, I should be left alone. I need to experience life. After I got thrown out of my 3rd high school for breaking into a locker, stealing drug money, which I wasn't even in school that day. I had cut school, which was normal. I was arrested by the cop that helped me cut school that day. And the damn locker happened to be my gym locker, which I didn't even have the combination for, and I had no idea who was using it, and I sure didn't want to open it because I couldn't even walk past it without getting sick. You know, teenage boys in their gym uniforms, they wash them regularly, you know. I think. I don't know, I never took gym, so I don't know whose uniform it was that stank, but it wasn't mine. So, anyway, figured out that they were going to brand me as a thief, so I joined the Navy to see the world. Well, what it was, I went down there and recruited. They had an Air Force recruiter, they had a Marine recruiter, a Navy recruiter, a Coast Guard, and the Army. The Air Force says, let's see your high school diploma, and I told him what to do. The Marine says, we can use good men. Come back later, boy. The Navy says, I can have you out of here. When do you want to go? I says, tomorrow. He says, the day after, if you pass the test. Coast Guard says, Now, there's laws against water pollution. Go out in deep water. And the Army says, don't worry about it. They don't want you. I'll get you in the end. And I says, well, sorry. I like three squares and a place to sleep at night. You know, three hot meals and a shower once in a while. So I went in the Navy. I squeaked by the test, went up to boot camp, and I'll tell you what, that was probably the longest time I was without alcohol until I put the drink down. It took me 3 days to establish a contact in boot camp to get a drink. I was drunk through boot camp. Every time I was arrested and went to jail or woke up in a jail, it took me at least that most 24 hours to be able to get contact to get high, because that's all I wanted in life, because it got me out of being what I was. And what I was a product of society, because society did not like me. I went into Vietnam when you went in the service, you were the all-American hero, going into becoming a, you know, good hometown boy, becoming the all-American hero, joining the military, you know. I came out, I was branded as a dope addict, alcoholic, baby killer, because I was, and spit at by even the people that I went to school, but that was the era which I lived. But that was okay. Because my buddy Jack Daniels and I, we turned around and we had a good conversation. Of course, Jack used to get nasty every now and then and kick the shit out of me. And I used to talk to my old granddad, and he used to take and do the same every once in a while. You know, and a good holiday dinner was a bottle of Wild Turkey, you know, and falling asleep in the mashed potatoes. Well, it looked like a pillow, didn't it? You know? My parents quit inviting me to dinner. In fact, my parents quit inviting me to come home. And it didn't matter. Because they just didn't understand. Nobody understood. You know? Nobody understood. I'm not hurting anybody. While I was in the Navy, my sister and her three children burnt to death in a house fire. The oldest one was 5, the youngest was 6 months. And if I didn't have the money to drink, I'd go into, you know, I'd go into the bar and I'd sit there and I says, what's the matter? I says, my sister and her kids burnt to death in a house fire. Oh man, have a drink. And I drank all night on that. I drank for 13 years on my sister's death, because it was a way to get over on people. It was a way to get over. I used every means I could to get over on people, because you people were nothing to me. My great alcoholic, egotistical self-centeredness turned around and made me take and think that I was the greatest thing in this world. I had some pretty strange jobs, repossessing cars that weren't ready for repossess. You know? I had other jobs, like trying to test security alarms. You know, I used to do all kinds of weird stuff to get high. You know, you didn't want to take and be within four arms reaches of me if you had to go to the bathroom in the bar, because your money was mine. You know, in the one town I lived in, I got popped for marijuana one time, and the town went dry because I quit selling. You know, I used to take and do all these kind of stuff. It just didn't matter. The only thing that mattered was getting high. Somewhere along the line, I took and wound up working for this company that had been in business for over 150 years in the town that I lived in. They moved down to Bardstown, Kentucky. They didn't take anybody with them. Thank God they didn't. There were 5 bourbon distilleries down there. It probably would have lasted about 10 minutes. Yeah. But anyway, somewhere along the line, I got arrested again. And I'll be honest with you, I really don't remember all the times I got arrested. I remember one time I was getting arrested down in Georgia for hitchhiking. I had to go from here to the back of the room before I was in Florida and wound up spending 90 days on a farm down there. Wound up making moonshine. But that was okay. Because I got what I wanted. I'd do anything to get high. I'd do things that I would not take and tell anybody but my sponsor that I've done. I've done a lot of things not to be proud of. But I thank God that I did them. Because knowing the depths of which I would go to get what I needed, to be able to do what I had to do, keeps me wanting to come back and do what I have to do to get what I got today. Am I an alcoholic? Yes, I am. Thank God. Now I know what's wrong with the rest of the world. You know, there is hope for them. I'll buy them all a drink. You know? There's a lot more about my story that'll come out as I go through these steps. Oh, in 1971, I was sent to this driving, intoxicating driving, learn how to drink like a gentleman, kind of like school. Kind of thing. It was like 16 weeks. It was $50 a clip, I think. I don't know. I'm still getting bills from them. Yeah. Or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, I went to that, and it was, at that time, the drinking percentage in New Jersey was 0.05. So I went to this thing, and they taught me how to drink like a gentleman. First of all, I'm not a gentleman. Second of all, upon graduation of this, they says, where are you going? I said, I'm going down to the Forest Tavern down the road down here and try this out. They said, oh, can we go with you? I said, well, more the merrier. They go, well, shit, I'll drink on them. Next morning or whenever I came to, I'm looking at these strange bars in front of me, and I look around, and there's half of the class, including the instructor. I said, I think I failed. That cost me about $175 fines, plus what I had to pay to the bar, because for some reason I wound up in a fight. Which wasn't unusual. Man, I used to hurt more people's fists with my face. And I mean it. I tried real hard to. It was this way here, somebody would take sympathy upon me and buy me a drink. But I didn't care. You know, you people are laughing at my sad story. The only thing sad about it is it's the truth. Thank God. Well, anyway, I was also sentenced that I had to go to AA meetings and get these DWI cards. Well, I went to my first AA meeting I was poured into, and I got my first DWI card. And I told them what they could do with their AA. Poured into my next AA meeting, and I get the bright idea, I'm going to find out where they got these cards, and I'm going to steal me some. I saw where they got them, but the only thing is, this big mean person was standing in front of me, and I just couldn't get to him. So I went back to my third one. And I walked walked in and the person turned their back and I walked out. They used to have these IBM punch cards. And I grabbed me. Goodbye. And I went and I was selling DWI cards for quite a while. Of course, I never sent any into the damn state. Hey, who cared? The drink was more important than my damn license. It was, you know, and all the times that I was drinking and driving, I've been eligible or to have a New Jersey driver's license since the age of 17. I've had a valid New Jersey driver's license. I've managed to total it up, going back to different police records and everything else, for a grand total, a valid New Jersey driver's license, not counting the time that I was overseas, for a grand total of 2 years, 4 months, and 7 days. And I got 17 DWIs on it in my state of New Jersey, not counting the ones in other states. I never got stopped when I didn't have a license. When I had my New York license, because I used to live down the border town, I go over the line and get a new license. What the hell? When that one got taken away, I go up to Connecticut. They didn't have computers back then. You could do this stuff. And then I ran out to Pennsylvania. You know, I'd lose it 6 months here, 6 months there, you know, and keep on back and forth, you know. Thank God they never caught up to me. Well, anyway, the last time that I had a drink, or the last time I had a license, I got drunk. I got arrested, and I went up in front of this judge, and this judge looked at me, and this is 8 o'clock in the morning, and the judge said, stand up. My lawyer held me up because I was too drunk to stand up. My lawyer says, 5 years, you're going away. And cost the court and fines and everything else and a whole bunch of stuff, you know, like more money than I know. And I says, well, okay. And he says, sit down. About 6 o'clock that evening, he says, stand up. My lawyer stood me up. By this time, I'm sick. I've already puked on myself sitting there. I've messed my pants up. I'm hurting. And I said to myself, I said, I hope this guy lets me out of here soon because, man, I need a drink. And he says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He says, you're an alcoholic. You got an alcohol problem. You got your choice. Go away. Or go to the rehab. I went to the rehab. I says, I'll go to the rehab. I went to the rehab later on. I had 2 weeks to get in there. And I hated that judge. But I just don't think I'd do jail too good. I got claustrophobia and I don't like locks. And I really don't want to take and have a girlfriend named Bubba because, like, you know, I'm young, sweet, and tender and, you know, like, yeah. Well, anyway, I went to this rehab. In Christmas Day 1984, they come up to me and they says, pack up, you're going home. I went down to New Hope, down here in Marlboro State, on the Nut House. I think I identified more with the friggin' nuts than they did with the alcoholics. Well, anyway, I walked in there and this girl turns around and she has a stack of papers about 2 inches thick. And she says, I gotta ask you some questions, sir. Like 3 days since I had my last drink, man. Don't call me sir, don't talk to me, and don't blink too loud. Ah, man. She goes, how much do you drink? Case of beer, a quart of booze, and a bottle of wine. She says, a week? I looked at her, and I said, no, a day. And she says, oh, okay, that's it. No more questions, go down the hall. Like a weak man, my father-in-law. This guy has a drinking problem. He'd buy a six-pack of beer and it'd last him 2 weeks. I mean, now this guy had a problem. He didn't know how to drink, you know? I knew, that's all I knew. Anyway, I went through the rehab. Christmas Day, 1984, they come up to me and they said, "Pack up, you're going home." I says, "How am I going to get home?" And he says, "What do you mean?" I says, "How am I going to get back up to Park Ridge, New Jersey?" That's exit 172 on the Garden State Parkway, and I'm down here in Monmouth County, some damn place. I says, "You live over in Freehall, over on Mechanic Street. You lived there for 2 years with your wife and kids, and you got a job." "Duh. I got a wife. I got kids. Where the hell is Freehall? And I got a job. Who's crazy enough to hire me?" He says, "Yeah, you do." "Duh." So anyway, this other guy, he was getting out, and he was going down to Lakewood. He says, "I'll have my parents drop you off." I said, "Okay." I got out of the car. Mechanic Street at the time was Dope City, USA. The man is standing on my porch and he goes, "Merry Christmas, Georgia." I said, "Man, I just got out of the rehab, man. Like, give me a break, you know? Like, that's cool, you know? Just let me be. Just let me have today." I knock on the door. This little girl about this tall. Blonde hair, blue eyes, smile on her face. Opens the door and says, "Daddy." I looked at her and I said, "Who the f*** are you?" She says, "I'm your daughter, Crystal." I said, "No, you're not." She says, "Yes, I am. I'm Crystal Lynn Smith. I'm your daughter." I said, "No, my daughter's this big and 2 years old and still in diapers." "Do you ever see that cartoon character when they cry? Well, the tears just go flying up in the air and all around. Well, that girl, her chin went to the floor and those tears come out like that. And she ran from me because I crushed her. And I look up and I see this guy standing there about 6 foot. Kill Manny, I would have been ashes in a crematorium." And he says, "I hate your friggin' guts." He says, "How dare you come home, you lowlife piece of scum." Now this is my 14-year-old son talking to me. His caring, loving father. I mean, I'd give my kids anything after I finished my beer. I'd take my kids anywhere after I finished my beer. I'd do anything for them after I finished my beer, but I never ran out of beer. This kid hated my guts. He wished me dead. And he says, "How dare you come home on Christmas and screw up our Christmas?" And I looked over and I saw this Christmas tree. Did you ever see a Charlie Brown Christmas tree? The one in the peanut gallery? Well, that tree would have looked like the tree in Rockefeller Center compared to the one that I saw. And there was nothing under it. And he spit in my face and he walked out and he says, "And there's no food in this house either, you son of a bitch. I hate you. Die." And he walked out of my life. Well, Merry Christmas, George. Welcome home. Now, don't these people know that I just got out of rehab and I should be all fine and well and good and you people should bow down and kiss me? No, that kid proved to me one point that I am an alcoholic and I was everything that kid said, because he said something to me that really made sense. He said that everything in my life either went up my nose, down my throat, or in my arm, and what was ever left, we went to the courts and fines and lawyers and nothing to the family. You know, he was right. You know, they were right in that rehab. I am an alcoholic. Before I had gone into that rehab, I had bought a keg of beer and a pound of pot for New Year's. I don't know whatever happened to it, so I never picked it up. Because I said I was never going to drink again. I said I was never going to drink again. knew I had to make it up to those kids. So I went to my first AA meeting in earnest, almost earnest, Christmas Day. I walked in, they were talking about God. I told them, take this God and stick it. And I walked out. I didn't drink. Today I realized why I didn't drink. It was only by the grace of God. And this went on, off and on. I'd go to a meeting and I'd hear this psycho babble they had. I'd hear about this God stuff and I'd walk out. But I didn't drink. I found out my wife was drinking. The kids come up to me and said, Daddy, do something with Mommy. She's drinking. I said, not a damn thing I can do about it. Well, after a couple years went by, and one day I went past where my wife works, and I said my foxhole prayer. Yeah, I used to say foxhole prayers when I was in, you know, God do this for me, God do that for me, but I didn't want to hear about God. But this day I turned around and I said, God, do something with that woman, because if she's drunk when I get home, I'm going to kill her. And I opened the door, and that 11-year-old girl says, Daddy, Mommy asked for help. And I just went over and I looked at my wife and I said, what? I said, what'd you say? She says, I need help. I went over, I got on the phone, I called my folks up and I said, come on over, we got to take Janet to the detox, into the rehab. I took her over to the detox and rehab. Go back over to New Hope. By this time, we weren't living on Mechanic Street. We were living over in Stonehurst. And they had a swimming pool over there. It was an old gray-haired old guy. And every time I went over there swimming, this gray-haired old guy and his blotchy girl, garbly or voiced wife, they used to stare at me and they used to smile. I remember that. But even when, through all this hate and everything else, this went on for years. Well, anyway, I took my wife over to that rehab, that detox. I walked out of there because she was going to stay, and I walked out and I hit my knees and I said, thank you, God. And I meant it, because I found out that night that God can do for me what I could not do for myself. I could not help my wife. And God also listed 100,000 million tons of prejudice and hate for me that night, and allowed me to realize that I'm not much of a human being. And I went to my first AA meeting for real. It was a Saturday night meeting over at this Freehall Area Hospital. And I sat down, there was a guy sitting next to me. You'll hear him in a couple months, Dennis Robbins. I use his name because he uses his name in the rooms. I use my full name in the rooms for the same reason my sponsor does. In case anything ever happens to me, I want you to be here to bring me a meeting into the hospital. Or if you're ever down in the area, you need somebody to talk to. My name is George Smith, and my name is and numbers in the book. Please, don't be afraid. Anyway, I went to that meeting, and there were a couple ugly people standing up there telling all kinds of war stories. And I said, man, at the end of the meeting, I said, thank God I'm not that bad. And this guy looked at me, and he says, no, you're not that bad. You're worse. And if you don't believe me, keep coming. Oh, I wanted to punch this guy. Oh, I wanted to punch him. And I'm backing up, about ready to hit him with this chair or punch him. I don't know what it was. And all of a sudden, my head just went, something hit me in the head. And I turned around, and I'm ready to deck this old, you know, this person. And this old guy standing there, old gray-haired old guy from the pool. Oh, hi. I knew you were going to make it. I'm glad you're here. I said, what the hell did you do? He says, here's a big book. It's the truth. And that you just got hit with the truth. Your drinking days are over, boy. How do you punch a 900-year-old guy? You've got a smile, but you just want to choke. I mean, this guy... Yeah. I And he goes, by the way, you met Dennis, didn't you? I says, yeah, well, what's your name? He said, my name's Joe Burns. I says, yeah, how long have you been sober today? 38 years worth of today's. I looked at him and said, nobody's ever been sober for 38 years. Nobody can go along that long without a drink. He says, you can one day at a time and don't die. Oh, I want to punch this guy. Give me a... Ooh. He says, I'm your sponsor. Ah, sponsor, I can make money out of this. This sounds interesting. He says, pick up those chairs and put them away. Help him with those tables, empty those ashtrays. And he says, pick up that big book and don't you ever put it down. I says, I got one at home. He says, we don't have enough of them. How many rooms are in your apartment? I says, well, we got the living room. He says, well, that's enough for your bedroom. He says, you need one for the bathroom. How many do you got now? I says, I got one. He says, that's good for the living room. You better have one in the kitchen, and you better carry one on you at all times, 24/7, and don't you ever let me catch you without one. And if you see a beat-up big book, the owner isn't. That was another real little sweet remark this gentleman made. Oh, did I hate this son of a bitch. I says, well, tell me about yourself. He says, I'm going to do more than that. I'm going to tell you about you. And he proceeded to tell me his story. And I thought he was telling me my story. There's only one thing. The names, the dates, and the places were different. I wasn't drinking back then. Hell, when these dates were, I wasn't even born. You know? I don't think my father was born yet, but it was my story. Everything he said was me. Everything. You know, I could identify with all the aches and the pains, the hurt, the feeling, the negativity, the desperation, the despair, the wanting, the depression, all that. I could identify with it. It was all there. There was no joy in his story. There was no happiness. And it was my story. And I says, that's me. And I don't want to live like that. And he gets a smile on his face and he says, don't worry about it, you're not going to. He says, I'll take a seat tomorrow morning at the pool at 11 o'clock. Be there and have your big book. And by the way, you better have a book to carry back and forth to the pool, too. I says, well, I got a big book. I says, I got a big book and I got a 12 and 12. He says, put the 12 and 12 on the shelf. I'll tell you when you can take it down. And he also, that night, he also gave me a copy of The Language of the Heart. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the language of the heart, but the language of the heart is to the traditions as the big book is to the steps. It is the directions on how to do it. He also gave me a service manual, which in that has our legacies and it has the concepts. And he also gave me a little orange book called As Bill Sees It. And he says, this is for light reading. Well, he says, you will read one passage in the morning. And you will read it again at night and see how your life compares. And how is you're going to get drunk. And he says, oh, by the way, he says, I want you to take and go out and I want you to get a dictionary no newer than 1935. I said, that's like 50 years ago, man. How am I going to find it? He says, you find it or you're going to get drunk. next morning, I said, screw him, I ain't going to the pool. After 11, my phone rings. How he got my phone number, I have no idea. He says, get your ass over to the pool. I says, okay, sir. And I went over to the pool. And he says, now open your big book. Oh, I left it home. He says, well, I just happened to have a spare on me because I knew you were going to. And he says, we will now go to step three. I said, well, what happened to steps one and two? He says, did you have any problem out there drinking? I said, no, I didn't have any problem drinking. He says, did you ever have any problems while you were drinking? Did you ever get your ass kicked? I says, yeah. He says, well, I guess your life's unmanageable, ain't it? I says, yeah. He says, did you ever have any trouble stop drinking? I says, all the time. I can never stop. He says, well, I guess you did step one. And that was the truth, man. I couldn't stop drinking. I had no trouble drinking. Hell, it was the only thing in life I ever succeeded at. I was a rotten father, a rotten employee, a rotten son, a rotten, you name it, I was rotten. I've been thrown out of more jobs, schools, and every other place that I've been in. In fact, even some of the bars even threw me out. In fact, quite a few of the bars I used to drink in threw me out. But the only thing I ever succeeded at doing is when I picked up a drink, I got drunk. You know, at work, people used to say, well, we're going to stop off and have one or two. I used to take and say, well, I'm going to stop off and get drunk. I never, because I knew that's what was going to happen. But I never admitted that I never understood that I was an alcoholic. I didn't understand the concept of that first drink. I didn't understand the misery I caused until that Christmas day when I destroyed my daughter emotionally. When my son told me what kind of monster that I was, because I always thought I was that nice guy. The nice guy that I always wanted to be. I never was. I never could be. My sponsor turned around and he goes, still have some here, thank you very much. Oh, by the way, I'm addicted today to caffeine. It was sugar. More sugar than caffeine. I really don't like coffee, so I like it really sweet, you know? But I thank you anyway, Mike. As far as the second step is concerned, I told him a little bit about myself when I was doing my third step. I told him about that miserable judge. He says, you know, that judge could have sent you to jail. But God made him see something good in you. Yeah, give me a break, old man. He says, no, there is something good in you. God wants you to be sober. God wants you to be joyous, happy, and free. And he says, I'll probably never use the word sober to you again. Because that's not the AA. AA is joyous, happy, and free. Lester has a definition of sobriety. Without alcohol and or mind or mood altering substances. Very boring. I like the alcoholic step. I like the big book definition. Joyous, happy, and free. Because I'll tell you what, today I am. You know? See, God opened the door for me by putting me in front of that judge. Because there was another judge that sits on that bench on the following day. And I would have gone to jail. He wouldn't have given me that choice. I know that. Because I know both of those judges today. The one that turned around and gave me the choice, God rest his soul, he's dead. But he saw me celebrate my 10th year. The other one, I went up, I called for jury duty one time, went in there. And I have a couple convictions on certain things. And I really should not be allowed on juries. So the prosecutor saw me and says, what are you doing here? And the defense attorney says, what are you doing here? And the judge calls me up and says, what the hell are you doing here? Because the judge knows I'm in recovery. I said, well, Your Honor, they turn around and I try to explain to the guy. He says, prosecutor says, can we make an exception? He says, I'd really like to have this guy. And the defense attorney says, I'd really like to have this guy on the... I says, I'd like to really be out of here. The judge says, okay, bye. And he let me go. But I'm going to tell you the strangest thing about me and the judge. The last time I've been in front of a judge was in November. No, it was... Yeah, November of last year, just before Thanksgiving. I went up in front of a judge. And I started laughing. And the judge says, what are you laughing about? I says, well, Your Honor, this is the first time I've been in front of a judge where I'm not the one being sentenced. And then he proceeded to marry my daughter and my son-in-law. Because he had saw my AA 90-day pin, he laughed because he knew what I was talking about. And it's only by the grace of God today that I'm sitting up here. I'm going to tell you another little thing about this sponsor I had, this dear sweet sponsor. He told me, as he took me through the steps, you will go through these and you will take and do everything that it tells you to do, or you will drink. You will do everything I tell you to do, or you will drink. If you're afraid of me, it means you're not afraid of that drink. Well, today I'm scared to death of that drink, and I have great respect for it. I also have great respect for my first sponsor. His sponsor was one of the first women in the state of New Jersey, and her sponsor wrote the book. So I was blessed by getting involved with the big book from the very beginning. I was told not to quote it because of my great intellectual two brain cells. I will probably screw it up. I am not to take a philosophize, you know, look at it philosophically. I'm just supposed to take and do what it says in the black part of the book, not the white part, you know. And don't read the words, read the meaning of the words. That's why I have the dictionaries. Today I have quite a few dictionaries. The oldest is a 1926. I have a 27, a 32, and no, 35, and I just got found me a 32. Because I go to junk, I go to bookstores and stuff like that. Because I want to know what Bill said in that book. I want to know the meaning of the words. You know, because in step four it says the grouch and the brainstorm are not for us. And then for years everybody called me a grouch. Well, amongst other things, but at least that one I can use here. You know, and I always thought have a brainstorm, I'll have another drink. But I found out a grouch is a fit of anger or rage. And a brainstorm is a mental upheaval bordering on and including temporary insanity. So a fit of anger or rage is not for us while we're insane. And I was insane for 37 years. Because I thought every time I picked up that drink, life was going to get better. It got different. A couple of years ago, about a year or so ago, I'm out on a commitment. And I'm up there and I'm talking, and I was talking about my grandfather. And I got to the part about his drinking. A case of beer, a quart of booze, and a bottle of wine. And I told it. And I got to the part about me going into the rehab. and what the girl said, asked me, and how I answered. I said, I drank a case of beer, a quart of booze, and a bottle of wine. And I said, I became my grandfather. I became everything that I really hated. I became that grouch, miserable, ignorant, belligerent, SOB, that lying, cheating thing I was. And I thank God today I can realize that. Today I am not what I used to be. I go to jails. I've been going into the Monmouth County Jail since my 90th day. My sponsor calls me up and says, we're going out on a commitment. I says, where are we going? He says, none of your business. I says, I'm not speaking. He says, okay. He pulls up and back at the Monmouth County Jail. I ain't going to the freaking jail. He grabs him by the neck and pulls me in, and all of a sudden he goes, uh-oh. And the room starts filling up, and these guys are all like 8 foot 20, 8 foot 23, you know, 900 pounds of solid muscle. I'm sitting there like, and there's my sponsor, this guy Harry C, God rest his soul too, and me. And Harry goes, read this, read that. And then they get all done opening the meeting. He says, now my first speaker, George Smith. And I says, look at my sponsor, and I said, you told me I didn't have to speak. He says, I told you you didn't have to speak, but it's Harry's meeting, and he says, you are, so you will. An hour and a half later, I got done speaking. I have no idea what I said, yet to this day. I was here at the day of sharing. Ron has borrowed the taste off me. He heard what I said. I don't know what I said. I still haven't listened to him. I haven't had a chance to. Thank God, because I've been so busy with AA. Thank you, God. But I'm going to tell you something. About 6 months later, I'm sitting in a meeting, and there's this guy in here. He's about 8 foot 16. He wasn't that big. You know, and he had, like, took up two seats. And he's staring me down, man. I mean, this guy looked like he got hit by the freight train about six times in his face, man. And he's ugly, and he's staring me. And I'm not saying I'm scared, but I'm petrified. And at the end of the meeting, they says, any joys or sorrows? And this guy raises his hand, and he says, I have one. He says, because of that guy that's sitting down there with that Tweety Bird. I used to have a Tweety Bird pin on my hat. And he says, because of that guy with that Tweety Bird on his hat, I'm celebrating a year today. I heard him in the Monmouth County Jail. You know something? That guy is about 3 inches shorter than me, and I outweigh him about 5-10 pounds. And he's still sober today. He's living down in Maryland. I talk to him every now and then on email. God, this program is wonderful. Thank you, God. I use very little of the expressions that I hear in the rooms of AA, because my sponsor did not bring me in as a fellowshipper. He brought me in as a big book thumper, a big book program. But one of the things I've heard in the room is I thank God for AA and AA for God. And I'll tell you the truth. I thank God, because God is my higher power today. I found him in these rooms, a God of my own choosing, my own understanding. And that's all I can take and say about my sobriety. Every day that I wake up is God-given, and every day that I don't drink is a gift from God, and I thank God for both AA and God and you people. Thank you for helping me stay sober. God bless you.